thought that was Santa Claus.
not yet, man. We're a few months away.
I know, we're back.
Hey, guys, yeah, cool. We are joined today by Mr. Nick
DiCarlo.
DiCarlo.
Sebastiano DiCarlo.
Sí, Sebastiano DiCarlo.
Yeah, Esteban, do the introduction, por favor.
He is the linguist, musician, man of mystery,
yeah,
traveler, and a really good friend. And it's really it's a treat to have you here with us today.
Oh, thank you.
That's yeah, it's going to be fun.
So you're a linguist.
Yeah.
And you're doing your PhD.
Yeah.
And what stages of your PhD are you in at
I
the
am writing the third test of four currently. I'm halfway through the third test. So my dissertation doesn't consist of chapters, so to speak, but it consists of tests.
Okay.
So each test is basically a chapter. So I'm on the third of fourth tests. And just writing it.
Okay, don't be afraid to, like, quote unquote, like, bore us with this detail because I'm fascinated with, like, linguistics. So, I mean, how do you dive into this world? Do you pick a language to focus on? Or are you picking a, you know, realm of languages that stem from one another? Or are you focusing on, like, what? Like, how does this work?
Linguistics is a beast. It's not really a unified study, whatsoever. I just picked Dutch. Because I've studied Germanic languages, so I've already studied German, Old Norse, Dutch, Afrikaans, Gothic, Old Saxon, Old High German, and did I say Old Norse? I think it's Old Norse. I don't know, whatever. So we studied all those languages required for us. And then from them, you find an area you want to specialize in. And then you get the language you want to specialize in. And then on top of that, you take the realm of linguistics you want to specialize in. And linguistics is made of multiple different branches. And inside of those branches, each branch has their own theory and their own schools, like multiplicity of schools. So I just picked Dutch, and I picked one word. Netherlands.
Netherlands. Yeah. Moeilijke taal.
Yeah, it's a moeilijke taal, maar het is ook een beetje moeilijk.
Yeah.
Als je in Duits kan spreken. Praat.
You like to lick.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, I just picked Dutch because there's the phenomenon I'm looking on in Dutch occurs in German too, but it's a dialect issue in German. So in Dutch, it's standardized. It's okay, fine. I'm just going to do Dutch. Done.
So what?
But you
what
do have dialects in the Dutch language
oh,
as
yeah.
well, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's you can argue that there is no such thing as a unified language.
Yeah.
Every language has a dialect and accents and what have you. So I'm not looking at any particular dialect of Dutch. I'm looking at standard Dutch. Because, yeah.
So, okay, now you pick Dutch. You mm-hmm. found your narrowed down the language. Like, what's next? Like, what are you studying about it? The semantics, the grammar, like the evolution, the etymology? Like, what is it? Or yes. all of the above?
Yes. No, what it is right now it's the grammar.
Okay.
It's theoretically the grammar. My advisor says it's the lexicon. I disagree sometimes, but that's okay. He's usually right. What I'm looking at is one word, one tiny little word, therewith in Dutch, and its manifestation in two forms. So therewith and there, blah, 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 with. And then I'm trying to find out whether or not there's a difference in meaning between the two forms and what motivates the split or the unsplittedness of the word.
And what's this translation?
Therewith.
Therewith.
Yeah.
And you said what's the difference you're looking for?
I'm looking for any difference in meaning, which I've already posited a difference in meaning. I just have to find a way to quantify it through statistics using corpus linguistics.
Fuck, so your entire research is based on one phrase, one word?
Yes. Yeah. It's based on one word, but it's the.
Are you looking at the history of the word as well, or how has it evolved, or is it in its current meaning and manifestation?
It's synchronic linguistics. I'm looking only at the present point.
Okay.
Because if I wanted to do diachronic study of it as well, because I wanted to look over the history of the usage of this word and when it started to split more or unsplit more, but then you can only write one dissertation in one lifetime. So it's like, no. There's already been a paper written from some guy in Holland about the variant uses of this particular form over time.
So what attracted you to that phrase? And
Helge Schneider. A German comedian. I was 17 years old. I lived in Germany, and I got to know this guy through my host brother, Christoph Wiese, and listened to Helge Schneider. And this guy sounds ridiculous, but he was hilarious when I got to understand him. And in his dialect, in German, they do it. So he says, ja, da habe ich kein Problem mit, instead of damit habe ich kein Problem. So it's split. in his dialect. So that really aggravated me. Because
the so end, much. Like the et, that's the difference?
Yeah, da habe ich kein Problem mit versus damit habe ich kein Problem.
Ah, okay. Mm.
And so he did it in his dialect. And I'd listened to Helga lots and lots and lots. And I kept hearing it over and over and over again in his dialect and his in his comedy. And I said, well, what the hell is going on? Why is he choosing to do it this way? And so I tried to find a reason in my mind for it. And I found one in German and it worked for me, but I couldn't get any quantifiable proof because it's a dialect issue. So there's no real strong corpora of German dialects. So I had to pick something that was standardized, and Dutch standardized the split. And so it's okay, fine, sold. So that's why. And that's why I'm in Dutch. It's just because of some funny comedian in German.
But then how do you go specifically to the phrase therewith?
How do you get there?
Yes.
How do I deal with the unsplit form, the damit?
Ah, okay.
So I look at the damit, which is the unsplit, so therewith, and I look at da, blah, 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 mit, which is the split form, but in Dutch, not German.
So, and so linguistics is a beast.
Yes.
And you picked like a tiny piece, like not even the whole like toenail, like a little corner of the toenail.
The cuticle.
Yeah, the cuticle, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, there's other people. There's a lady who wrote an entire, was it 560-something page book on Spanish se. That's it, se. The pronoun se, S-E.
Yeah.
And just, like, she spent years of her life writing this giant, giant, giant tome on that one little word.
And is it interesting?
Yeah. She goes down and says basically the end of it. It's like, se means nothing.
And, like, I mean, on a personal
level. Well, no word means anything. We just apply a meaning into everything. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, here's your PhD.
It's arbitrary. Yeah. Well, the meaning of the word and the way the word manifests itself is completely arbitrary. That was brought to attention by Saussure in, like, the early 20th century. So, like, why we have the word dog manifested orthographically as D-O-G for what we see on the street or what you have in your house, why that's called dog and not can is completely arbitrary. It can be called can.
Yeah.
So it's just this, you know, but because it's called dog, it has a meaning and it's a symbol for something. And therefore, like, you associate this symbol with all the different things about a dog. And those are all dependent upon the context and also in your social context.
But so how it came to be is arbitrary, yet it came to be, so then there is meaning applied to it.
Yeah, but it could also like change over time.
Yeah, exactly.
And it can change within groups or individuals too.
For example, dog can also mean your friend.
Yeah. It's
spelled differently, but it still sounds the same. What's up, dog?
You know? Not that much. We're doing a podcast.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's completely arbitrary. So why I chose darme, I could have chose darbai, I could have chose daran, I could have chose so many of them, but I just chose darme.
So is your colleague like doing darbai?
My calling?
I'm saying like your colleague or else, like, or has it been done or?
No, I mean, no. I'm the only one who's looking at it this intensely because, yeah.
And do you use, like, on a personal, like when you speak Dutch or German, do you use the split or the unsplit form?
That is the trick because, like, people have said in all these grammars and all these the treatises on Dutch, and this is one little word because it's actually in lots of grammars, they say, oh, it's just a choice that's completely arbitrary. It doesn't matter. And nothing in language is arbitrary except for the meaning. You have a choice between two forms. Why do we just say, I turned the light off versus I turned off the light? Well, one means something different than the other. But we don't consciously know the difference between the two of them. But there is a reason you would say, oh, yeah, I turned the light off or I turned off the light.
So. Do you think we're... Because those are a set grammatical rules that have to be upheld or else they're just lost. Do you think we're losing that now in like with the context in which like language has been used more frequently recently?
Prescriptive grammatical rules are to be broken. Otherwise, we'd be speaking like they spoke in Beowulf and we'd be speaking German. So grammatical rules are constantly, constantly broken.
But that sounds so much more badass. No,
I mean, because language dictates the rules as time evolves or time passes. Yeah, and
the speakers dictate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's on the rule, you know. So, I mean.
Yeah, the rule's written down, and they want it to sound like, okay, this is the standard. Because you need to create some sort of standard language in general for most people to speak to have some sort of homogenous way of speaking with each other and communicating. Because if we were at the level that we were in, let's say, the 8th century in Germany, if I were living in this town, like if I were in Reseda, what I am now, and then you came over to my part of the city, which is in the Santa Monica area, we might not understand each other. But the differences were that large. between dialects and just the way people spoke. So they tried to create, like, especially in the 16th and 17th century in Germany particularly, they tried to create some sort of homogenized language that everybody understood. You still spoke your dialect at home. You still spoke in your community. But there was a standard language, which was very important for people to learn.
That differed from your home dialect.
Oh, very much so. You had that dichotomy in Switzerland, particularly, because you were taught standard high German in Switzerland in school. You were forced to learn it because that's, you know, no one really writes or uses your dialect. But Swiss German is incomprehensible for anybody who doesn't live in Switzerland.
It's like very, it's like singing. There's a very, you know, right? In Swiss German.
Very much so. And they've maintained a lot of the phonological rules from the 1400s. So Swiss German still says Hus instead of Haus. And they still say Mien instead of Mein.
But do you understand it?
I do, because I lived on the border for a while. But, like, you get
had you not lived in the border, it would be really complicated.
It would be very, very hard to understand it. Because it's an entirely different language. It sounds very, it's like Catalan in Spanish.
Yeah.
You can get the gist of it somewhat.
But it's completely different.
Yeah, it's totally different. Like, all right, whatever. Yeah. So that's the difference.
I mean, you would be the right person to ask this question. I've always wondered this. Like, think about Spanish, mm-hmm. right? And, okay, think about Spain. When I was traveling in Spain, and I'm sure you've noticed this when you traveled as well, like, the further south you go, the lazier the language becomes.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know if it's because of the heat or what it is, but is it... I've also thought of it, okay, think about how Portuguese changed as well. Is it because people... Like, I always
looked
at it...
Well, I mean, it's also, like, for example, the Caribbean, like, the islands, you know, like, the Spanish is more, like, if you want to call it, like, quote-unquote, lazier.
So even with that, is
but
it
I mean, I think
because,
it's also, for example, in the U.S., too, like, the South.
Well, yeah.
I've always had this presumption that it was because... the language being taught to those that were somewhat illiterate at the time morphed the language in a way and created this dialect. Like, is that true? Like, does that have any grounds to why these, like, let's say if the origins of one language morphed because of the people who weren't, let's say, following the grammatical rules to the T, like, did that transform, did that assist in this evolution that the language, like, took part in?
That's hard. It's possible, but everywhere throughout, like, the world, and especially in Europe, you see that the multiple different dialects and the way that people speak, and I don't necessarily know if it's the prescriptive rules themselves which changed the way people speak. Of course, it did. But I don't know if that, because they were literate at one time, that caused them to speak the way they do. It's just they have totally different accents in the way they are. Like, if you go, speaking from here, from Austria, let's take Austria for example, right? They're pretty literate in Austria, I would say. But if you go to the far west, they have the Swiss voice. So it's a little harsher sounding. But the further east you go, it's a little slower. It's a little more open. Like this, right? Instead of thaltai. And so it's not to say that people in the east are less educated than people in the west. And the same within Germany. The people in the north are very short and not short people. They're pretty damn tall in the north. But the way they speak, their words are shorter and they're a little more articulate. Whereas you go in the south in Bavaria, like, Bavarian is really easy to speak when you're drunk. Like, really, really easy to speak. But when you go up north, Hamburgerisch is not easy to speak when you're drunk because it's very, they call it schnacken. So schnack, schnack, schnack. But in Bavaria, it's like, oh, ist das so gut noch? Das heißt, nicht so schwierig, zu Bayerisch zu reden, du musst so ein bisschen Bier getrunken haben, ne? You follow?
Yeah, I don't follow at all. But
that's okay.
I follow the difference in the sounds.
So I don't necessarily know if teaching the language to people who were literate would have caused it to become that way. It's just they maintain their dialect. They maintain their accent for a long time.
I mean, I think it has to be because, like, you know, just rewind to when, you know, let's say the people, everyone's not being educated. That's only reserved for, you know, higher class societies. You're not reading, so you're not partaking in seeing the structure of which the language needs to be set in. So you're just forming the sentences at the best of your abilities, and that's morphing. And everyone's hearing that. That's what's being repeated and modeled after. And I don't know. I can be completely
wrong.
Yeah,
but I mean, like that... I don't think that argument holds, especially today, you know, because
I'll give you one example. Like,
no, I mean, for example, Cuba, like they're all educated and they speak the way they speak, you know, and that hasn't like changed, you know, dramatically. And I don't think it has to do with education per se. I think it's just, I mean, there's some arguments about like climate, right?
But what?
Like climate, like closer to like the equator, you know, like, maybe it's just lazier sounds, you know, or more open vowels. But I don't think it's necessarily an educational, like, thing, you know? I think it has to
but
do more
with... don't you
with,
think, like, every country you go to has that...
I mean, let's ask a linguist.
Yeah.
Well, where are we answering this? Like, we're not...
Well, I don't know. Let's ask more questions. Like, every country has that... notion that like, oh, the like quote unquote like villagers have a different way of talking. I mean, this is applied to Brazil, this is applied to Switzerland, this is applied to like, you know, every country you go to, like the I don't know, and well let's turn that over to you. Like it has there is this notion that, oh, these people from this area and this point in the society like speak differently.
Yeah, that's kind of that point was made, I think, in the 70s or 80s with William Labov, who was like one of the first social linguists who looked at that question in African-American vernacular English, and actually was the first person that I know of that looked at it and said, this is actually a legitimate version of English. You guys can't be knocking it. You have to study it, understand it. And people in different communities speak differently because they want to identify with their community. So yeah, a person from a village is not going to talk like somebody from New York City. If you pull someone out of Raton, New Mexico, they'll sound perfectly regular in English, but they won't use similar vocabulary. They'll speak maybe a little slower. They'll speak about different things, about the weather, as opposed to New York City, where you're going to talk about the subway breaking down and you're going to talk really fast all the time. You want to speak, for the most part, like people in your community. You want to sound like people in your community. You want to identify. You want them to identify with you. And that's one of the things I told Esteban when I first started listening to this podcast on my trip. Yeah. I was like, dude, you guys sound Californian.
Oh, you're talking about our podcast?
Yeah, I was listening to it. I was like, holy crap, this is what Californians sound like. And it's not a negative thing. It's just the way you guys, not you guys, Californians in general articulate and the prosody of the language, because you want to identify with that community. And that's not negative. It's just you want to stay, you want to maintain an identity that you belong somewhere. And that's what human beings basically want to do. We want to belong to a group. And so to ostracize yourself from that group by speaking differently, then it'd be uncomfortable for you. That's why the villagers speak like the villagers speak, as opposed to living in the village and saying, well, oh, I must talk like this.
Yeah, but they don't, they're not aware that another version exists.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
I mean, we're talking about like the, I'm not talking about the present time. Okay. I'm talking about the, like how the language transformed.
Yeah, just like with children don't necessarily know that there are different variations of English when they're learning it. They speak what's in their area. They mean,
yeah, I can't wait to like make weird accents when I'm talking to my child and just like see like, you know, what way they're going to end up talking.
My dad did the test when we were kids.
Really?
Yeah, it threw me
fascinating. I love your dad now.
Yeah. It's a bit weird. Yeah. I grew up a little kid and he just started talking to us. Like, so what did you do doing today in school today? I was like, mommy, why is dad talking differently? Like, oh, your dad's weird. Yeah. So I grew up listening to different sounds and languages.
You know what? I think it's fascinating what you're saying now about how language or the way we speak or our intonation or a dialect is a way to belong, because there's so many ways of belonging, not only by language, by speaking, intonation, but also by clothes, right? Body language.
Yep.
And all these things like are factors in what we call identity, right? And especially when you bring it like on a micro level to like small communities or families or groups of friends or neighborhoods, you kind of see that playing out. And I think that's really beautiful, you know?
Yeah. And I'm not the most German looking person. Okay. I'm not going to lie. I don't look much like a German.
Are you German?
No, we're Sicilians.
Okay.
And Native Americans. But when I was in Germany.
I was going to say, you look half Sicilian, half Native American.
Yeah, like Sicilian from the neck down. That I can't grow facial hair, but I can grow everything else.
One, two.
So when I was in Bavaria, like when I was in northern Germany, it wasn't a big deal because I spoke German and they're like, oh, you're one of us, but I'm not. But they didn't think that. But when I was in Bavaria, if I spoke standard German, which is the, you know, the standard which you're expected to learn in school, that you speak on the TV, they looked at me funny. They're like, oh, you're one of those people from the north. You're a Prussian. Or, oh, you're one of those. You're not from our neighborhood. You're not from our community in Bavaria. And then, you know, I got the, first of all, you're brown, so you must be Turkish. No. And then you speak regular German, so you must not be from here. I was like, oh, I'm not. You're right. And then I thought to myself, well, how am I going to integrate into society where they're going to, like, be cool with me? And then just they'll talk to me on, you know, a regular basis and not sort of.
Was that primarily older folks or also, like, younger ones?
Some of the younger ones, too. But the younger ones are more interested in the fact that I spoke German. I was from California. And depending on the education level, they're more interested in the fact that I'm from California or not.
Yeah.
I recognize the people who weren't really good in school were more interested that I was from California. And they're like, oh, so you know Tupac? I was like, yeah, we go way back, dude. is he from New York, though, isn't he? Tupac's from New York, right? We just lived in Calabasas for a while.
I mean, he's all about the West Coast, I would assume.
That's that movie, that's right. I saw the Tupac movie.
Isn't Biggie Smalls from the East Coast?
I'm not well educated. It's like rap culture. I don't want to say something incorrectly to offend anyone.
So yeah, the point was that I learned how to speak with a Bavarian accent. I couldn't speak the language perfectly, but I got the accent down. And so once I did that, then people were much more friendly to me in the bars, especially the waitresses, and in general. Like I was there over Christmas break with my friend, and we were in an art store. She wanted to get some supplies for her sister out here. And so we were speaking in English, and she's half Syrian, half Honduran, and I'm what I am. And we got to the counter, and the lady in front of us, she was German, blonde with her daughter, and they spoke thick Bavarian accents. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, have a nice night. And we got to the counter. It's like, oh, how can I help you? Yeah, this passt schon. Das kannst du mal das hier kaufen für die Schwester in Kalifornien. Das kannst du mal mitnehmen. And it's like, hey, I see your face. I hear your voice speaking English, and now you're speaking my language.
Doesn't make sense, yeah.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden he was friendly. Yeah. And so I just learned sort of chameleonize everything. Like if you speak the way they speak, they're more likely to be friendly to you.
Yeah, and yeah. I've always found that as like a form of respect as well. You know, like I always caught myself, you know, especially when I was younger, and I just, you know, I expect it to happen now as well, but like when I would be with someone, let's say we had family members visiting or we were traveling, when someone has an accent, whether they're speaking in the accent or speaking their language, like you would catch yourself speaking like them. You know, if I had a cousin from Australia visiting me, like I would develop an Australian accent, not because I'm like mocking them, not because I'm trying to have an Australian accent, but it was just some form of respect, you know? And, you know, some people kind of lack that where they force their way of, like, you know, whether it's correct or not, their way of like pronunciation upon someone who's trying to learn the language as well, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, body language goes a long way when you're traveling, but the deterioration of you speaking your native tongue, you know, like let's say like English, when you're traveling with someone who has difficulty speaking the language, like they prefer that. Yeah. You know, and it's truly amazing.
And I think you just answered your question about the village.
Yeah, there we go.
Out of respect,
podcast over. Yeah. But Esteban was bringing up a good point that, you know, how language and clothing and all these things, you know, and you brought this up too, you know, is used as a tool to belong and to be part of this community, and I see that. A lot now with young kids that are bilingual, and I see this a lot right now, like, oh, I'm working in, you know, different school settings, and you have a lot of, you know, the Latin demographic in these like middle schools, elementaries, whatever. And the kids don't want to speak Spanish, you know, and they want to belong. They want to speak English, and you have their parents trying to speak. They want to learn English too. They want their children to learn English to conform and adapt. But at the same time, it's like, hey, kid, like, you don't know how beneficial this is going to be to you if you were to learn Spanish as well.
Yeah, but I think that is motivated a lot by parents that don't want their kids to speak Spanish, so they have no remnant of an accent in Spanish, yep. Right? And then their Spanish is completely lost, yep. You know? And I think that's a tragedy. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you, Nick, because talking about community and belonging and language as we're talking, because you were born in Arizona, right? No, you're not.
I was born in Northridge.
Northridge. Okay, but you lived
94 earthquake.
Yeah, I was out for that. I was born in Northridge in 1980, lived in Simi Valley until 88, moved to Arizona 88
okay.
to 90, moved back to Simi Valley in 90, moved back to Arizona 90, and I was in Arizona from 1990. And
then you've traveled. I mean, you lived in Germany. Oh.
And then when did you go to Germany?
When I was 17.
And then how long were you there?
For 11 months. And then I went again when I was 23 for 11 months. And then I went again for 3 years when I was 27.
And by yourself or with family?
By myself.
So, I mean, I want to ask you, because, I mean, obviously you've picked up all these different accents. I mean, maybe from, like beginning from, like, a Californian, like, Valley accent. Then you went to Arizona, then you came back, and then you went back to it, and then you left the country. So how do you belong now living in L.A.?
Music.
Music, yeah. So that's a good segue, too.
The universal language.
I just, I don't. I belong with music, and that's what I found in LA too. Like, I found that here. I found people, like, an extremely diverse group of people. And the first band I started with was Killsonic, and it was like most mind altering band I've ever been.
And what instruments do you play?
All things heavy and brass, so yeah. Mostly tuba. So if you got like a tamborazo, it's a tubero.
YouTubero. That's so funny. But do you feel like an Angelino?
No.
So how do you feel like identity wise, if there's any identity that you kind of are more connected with?
I'm very connected with Germany, but I don't like the Germans that much. I like the Germans, but I like Germany. I don't know. I'm a human being who stands when he pees. Unless he's at his friend Sabina's house, in which case I have to sit because she doesn't like when guys stand when they go to the bathroom, which is in Germany.
How stifling.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, how I identify, I don't identify as in Arizona, that's for damn sure.
Fuck Arizona.
Seriously.
Except Tempe.
Yeah, that's where I went to school. Yeah. As an Angelino, not really. I mean, my dad lived his entire life here, except for the last 4 years of his life, and he went to Colorado. He went to school at Van Nuys in Birmingham.
That's so funny.
So, like, I don't identify with that either. It's just weird. I do like cars, though. I don't like traffic, as you know.
Yeah.
So
how often? I'm like, so you lived in Germany for 11 months at a time, twice.
Yeah.
In your life.
Yeah. And then for 3 years.
And then for 3 years.
And then for 3 years.
Well, 2 years in Germany, 1 year in Austria.
So basically, you were gone for like almost 5 years.
Yeah.
That's good, man.
Yeah, I want to go back. We've gone for the 25.
So when you, I mean, when you travel at a young age, and especially when you're staying somewhere for an extended period of time, it really does teach you to adapt. You know, like, I'm sure, I mean, this applies for my personal story of when you move, like, okay, when you're born in one place and you stay in one place, you have your entire community and network. It's like, it's a safe zone, right? Yeah. And when you move, I mean, depending what kind of individual you are, you're worrisome about whether or not they're going to reestablish the sense of community and networking again.
Yeah.
And what I found in my experience is that was, and like you're saying, established real quick through music as well.
Yeah.
Extremely cool. And in Holland, you know, and the school I went to it was very international, like, demographic of students, but music united everyone.
Yeah.
Besides music, it was, everyone's sharing in this experience together. But that networking, that community developed really, really quickly. You know, it was very surprising. And, you know, not any less important or crucial you know, than the one I had here, you know. But then you come back here and you want to maintain the connection that you established when you were abroad. But you keep moving back and forth, and that becomes quite difficult to do. But those you care about, you put an effort to keeping your friendships afloat. So I want to ask you, like, I'm sure you have, you know, vast amount of friends in Germany, or you have a select few that you do care about, and you have to put that effort in communicating and maintaining, you know, the sense of connection that you established, right? Isn't it weird that, like, you're going to all these places, now you have these connections to, you know, various people from different countries, but you're constantly moving around?
Yeah, it's weird. But then you just realize that we're all humans anyway. And so you start seeing stereotypes in people. And instead of, like, not stereotypes in a bad way, but you just find, like, archetypes. Let's call them archetypes instead of stereotypes. And then you just, like, oh, yeah, you remind me a lot of my friend so-and-so.
Isn't that weird? Any group that you get invited to take part in, mm-hmm. you see those same personalities and characters, not like developed because it's already there, but you apply, you know, what you have in your knowledge base, like, oh, this guy's like, he's the Esteban in the group. He's the Nick in the group. It's like, it's weird, but it's
what
very
I mean,
true.
It's because I think you kind of are drawn to what you like.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
But I mean, like, speaking of that, like, in my own experience, being born in Mexico City and then coming here at a, like, early age, I never connected to for example, like, the
other Mexicans.
Like, the Mexican community here, you know, because, I mean, the majority of them, like, the Mexicans that are here are from the north, you know, like, different, like, social backgrounds, you know, like, completely different cities, like, completely different profiles than myself, you know, coming from a big city, like, coming from this family, this politically, you know, like, intellectually, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, I felt drawn to peoples of different nationalities, you know, especially Armenians, Russians, Indians. And I connected more with them. Like, their experience was something that was more close to mine. And for me, the fact that this other, like, million people that came from the same, seemingly same country than me, didn't mean anything to me. You know, I was drawn to a bigger, like, spectrum of emotion and of a vision of life, if you want to call it, than just this kind of very artificial stamp that a nation state is, right?
And can I go on the segue? This is a great segue to, like, explain to those who don't know, like, how we met. You know,
this is a love story.
Yeah, just a quick little background. So I had my older brother. He's 4 years older. Went to Van Nuys High School. It was a good school. Had a magnet of performance art, math and science, and medical magnet. And then I had its regular, like, residential little students as well. So my brother...
So condescending. Like these little students.
we had the math, the people, and the art people, and then the rest.
Yeah. Well, it was like that, man. It was a fucking crazy school, man. Besides the point, the things I saw on that campus were more than bizarre. But so my brother went there. So then, you know, that was a reason that my twin sister and I, you know, went to the school as well. So my brother had done swim team. So my sister joined the swim team. I wanted to play soccer. You know, they didn't have a hockey team. So I'm like, okay, the next best thing is soccer. So I joined the soccer team. And like the first day of practice, you know, I'm on this field with like just fucking like 50 like Mexicans, right? Or other like Latinos, let's say. But I felt so out of place, you know? Like it was just, I felt like an oddball because everyone, like Esteban is saying, is like from like the like northern region. Not that it's bad, but you know, I just felt like, okay, there was like a spotlight on me because I have like lighter skin, right? So I looked around.
I mean, you dressed differently too.
Yeah, 100%. And I have like long hair, you know. So I look around and I find someone else who has like, you know, fair skin and looks similar to me. And we looked at each other. We're like, you want to get out of this team? And I told him like, hey, man, like my brother was in the swim team. My sister was in the swim team. So that light skinned individual was Esteban, you know, an undercover
and
Mexican.
Here we are.
From the,
did you guys have
the
mustaches
capital
at the time too?
No, that was a difficult effort to grow. You know, but yeah.
I think that exemplifies what I'm saying in a way, you know, like in a very clear way, because it's interesting how even, for example, even traveling, you've traveled, Nick, like we've traveled extensively as well, that connections that you have with people have nothing to do really with a language or just a country or like economical status or it doesn't really, it's more an intrinsic, it's more of a visceral thing that draws you to someone, right? And we have great friends like in different parts of the world, and for us it's something that we always kind of highlight and kind of always cherish, because it's really fucking cool to be able to connect with someone from a whole different culture, language, different life experience, and nonetheless have this synergy with them, right? Yeah. And I think in our case, at least, we feel that the community outside maybe this country or to like kind of garnish these relationships is like greater. And I think you feel that same way too. And that's why you're motivated or you're like, you're compelled to go back to Europe.
Yeah. It's not just that it's greater, it's just you have much more diversity of different people, of course. And you have a huge diversity in this country as well. But for me, it's a little too homogenous for my tastes. Like people are different all over the world. I get it. But like the ability to meet somebody in Croatia who may have come from Bosnia in 92 to get out of something and they'll share something with you was much more interesting to me than meeting somebody in, God forbid, Chandler, Arizona, who went to school with me and is still there with their six kids. Bless their heart. Good for them. But I don't know. Traveling around and meeting people from different cultures is what makes us human. Because if we just stay in our community, we just stay what we're doing with the people, we're not going to develop at all. We're not going to understand like, oh, that person over there looks different, so I have to ostracize him. No, you don't ostracize him because that person's the same as you. You bleed all blood that is red, unless you're a Vulcan.
I bleed blue. I'm sorry.
You bleed blue. Oh, wow.
But I mean, that's so true, because like you meet someone, when you wash away the, you know, the cultural differences, the background difference, the, like as everyone was saying, the people you're attracted to are like-minded individuals. And regardless of where they're coming from or, you know, what they survive to be where they are, you know, their personality pretty much aligns with yours, yeah. You know? And it's bizarre. But you don't unravel that until you give them somewhat of like a benefit of the doubt and you give them the time of day and spend time with them to, you know, to get to their center, I guess. But I mean, if you had the option as a linguist,
yeah,
to do away with the differences in languages and dialects and grammar and everything, would you want to establish some universal language to, I guess, filter out this process of finding like-minded individuals quicker? Or is that difference and the uniqueness and the varying backgrounds that people come from, and language is a big part of it, funner?
that is much more entertaining.
Yeah,
universal language.
Boring.
Universal
right?
language.
Esperanto.
Yeah, that's why Esperanto died. Because yeah. It's fucking boring. Sorry, Paul. My friend loves Esperanto, but it's a boring language.
Can you educate Esperanto?
I don't know much about it, but I know it's extremely regular, and it's created from a lot of Romance languages, a few Germanic languages, and I think Czech. And it was mostly so it's Eurocentric. Let's put it that way. So it'd be difficult to learn Esperanto if you're Chinese.
So it's a language created to kind of create this unity.
When was it created? Is it still used?
It's still used. There are actually native speakers of Esperanto. Really? And there was one movie, I forgot the name of it, but William Shatner did it. It's all in Esperanto.
Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, man. Okay, go fuck you. Okay. I'm going. I forgot the name of it, but it's a really horrible movie, and it's all done in Esperanto.
I'm sure with William Shatner involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it would be terribly boring on this planet if we all spoke one language. Now, if we had a lingua franca, which we kind of do already, which is English, then that's fine. You can communicate along those lines. But if everybody spoke the same language all the time, I wouldn't want to be on this planet anymore.
Yeah, how would you watch foreign films?
You wouldn't. Yeah. there has to be diversity in language, by all means. Of course, languages are coalescing to becoming one. Not one, but they're becoming very similar in many ways. Like the diversity you saw in, like I was saying, in Austria, where I lived. If I was in Dornbirn and I wrote to, what was the name of the place? Lustnau. They have two different words for different things. So a Dornbirner couldn't understand a Lustnauer, and that's only a 15-minute bike ride.
It doesn't matter how big or small a country is. You're always going to have these divisions between one region having a variation in the tongue.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. Like no matter how small or big a country is, it's still not going to be unified.
I mean, you see it in cities too, like in neighborhoods.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go to Santa Monica, they'll speak totally different than people in East LA.
Exactly.
You go to Glendale, they whatever. But they just speak different than somebody in Thousand Oaks.
Yeah.
And so like we're in the same area and it's all different. And like in Arizona and Phoenix, for example, you knew somebody's from the west side of the valley with the way they spoke versus somebody from the east side of the valley, even though they're different area codes. So it's gonna exist forever. It's impossible to have one area that's all homogenous.
Because
there's just an influx of people. But we are, like I said, the languages are coalescing to become more unified in some way. Like Germany has lost so many dialects over time, and so many people aren't, like Plattdeutsch, which is the northern German, which is actually a different language, is dying out in some ways because, you know, the younger generation doesn't want to speak it. It's not as cool. However, the southern dialects are living because they think it's cool. They'll die out, but the way we're going now, the world is balkanizing soon enough. They're going to be like this backlash against globalization, and then we'll back in this dark ages where we won't understand each other from 3 miles away. But just that take time.
Yeah, but is that even plausible at this point with the connection that the internet is providing?
Oh, it's very plausible. People thought that Latin wasn't going to die as a lingua franca, and who speaks Latin anymore?
I tried to take Latin at school and there was no one to teach it.
What's interesting about Latin too is that, I mean, to your question earlier, what the Latin you're referring to, it's vulgar Latin.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the one that remained, that kind of like survived, like in its written form today. And like at the time, it was not the formal one that like Jewish philosophers system. and the elite wanted the masses to speak, you know, and had actual form, like had like grammar books on it, and it didn't work, you know. And I think you kind of see it today, even more perhaps technology, right? With like texting, abbreviations, all these words that are coming up.
It'll change.
Yeah, I mean, it's an evolving thing, and you can't presume it to be stable.
No.
Language, it's kind of silly to think that.
It's almost as unstable as Earth was last night around 1 o'clock.
It was very scary.
Yes.
I didn't feel a thing.
Yeah, well, I really couldn't sleep again for a couple
hours. Was it the sun?
It was a 5.0, right?
5.5 in Borrego Springs.
Joaquinto fault? What is that? What's the fault called? I think Joaquinto or something like that.
It was far away.
Yeah.
But yeah, language is unstable like that. Like it'll change on a whim.
Which is remarkable that the languages that are ancient, you know, Armenian being one of them, have survived like this long.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you want to maintain your community.
Yeah.
And you'll fight for it. Just like English, up until the Norman invasion, looked very much like German. And then the Normans came, French, and destroyed it. So it was a beautiful Germanic-looking language, as we had very similar structures to German. And the
French was.
No, English.
Oh, English was. Okay.
And then the Normans invaded and changed the way the language was written. Because the French became the language of the court, or Norman French or whatever became the language of the court. And that influenced the way English was written and spoken. And that's why we have so many Romance words in English versus German that does not have as many, at least in, let's say, more complicated, more advanced language like English.
How old is the word fuck?
That I don't know. But I do know that it has multiple variants throughout the world, in the Germanic-speaking world. But
so it is present in German as well.
Yeah, it's ficken.
It's ficken.
Ficken, yeah, but it goes back to some word meaning to rub.
Mm.
So, yeah, fuck just means to rub something, which makes sense.
Go rub yourself.
Yeah, well.
But I mean, the word mafunke, which means positive sweat.
What?
Mafunke.
That's where funky comes from.
Yeah, funky comes from. Mafunke, like, sounds like pretty like fuck.
Where's that from?
Yeah.
Swahili?
Some African.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, some like West African.
It's positive sweat. Yeah.
But I'm thinking mafunke sounds like fuck, you know? I mean, and if it's positive sweat, obviously.
I know funk comes from that, but I guess some variation of fuck.
But yeah, positive sweat is what happens when you fuck anyway. So.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But like funk music, that's you know, the groove that makes you want to sweat in a positive manner.
Yeah, there is definitely someone who's written a larger article on the word fuck. I forgot who it was, but there is one. Oh, I think his last name is Macaulay. I don't know for sure. He started the field of scatolinguistics.
What's scatolinguistics?
Basically,
shit.
Yeah, studying the filth words of English, filth of linguistics. So it's interesting, and it was really popular in the 70s. I believe he published out of the Sam Houston Institute of Technology. That was where he was, or the Saigon, something like that. It was some joke, but it was as a linguist who published a whole bunch about filthy words in English and other languages. And, you know, there we go. Now you can ask him where fuck came from, how old it is. Because I don't know. I should, though.
You should, yeah.
I know.
Next thesis.
Next one, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'll get to that eventually. But
like, speaking of dialects, I wanted to ask you, because, I mean, I study literature, and obviously you read as well, like, words of fiction. Can you identify dialects when you read?
If they're written in the standard language, no, but there are many works that are written in dialect. There's a South African author whose book I bought, I forgot his name, but I bought it from my advisor, who actually writes in Cops Afrikaans. And you use, once again, these languages and the dialects to create the sense of community. So you create a belonging to it. Like, if it's just a regular book written, you're going to have a hard time. But Heinrich Böll's Views of a Clown, when you read it, you can kind of get the sense that he's in a different... I think it's in Cologne. You can kind of sense that in some of the words they choose. But you have to be really in tune to the language.
Yeah.
Because you can't just pick it up out of nowhere. Like, if you're just reading it as a learner of the language, you're not going to pick up on it. But if you're reading it as someone who's lived there and that, and Reva, the Dutch author who does it a lot, all of his dialogues are in, like, was it 18th and 17th century Dutch? But what's the dialogue? No, the dialogue isn't, the dialogues are slang, but the narrative isn't archaic Dutch.
That's awesome.
So I was like, yes. And then he goes far, far away and departs on his trusty steed and arrives at the bar and says, "What's that motherfucker hung me with a drink, bitch?" And so that's what he'll write like. So you're just like, wait, what? So yeah, you have this crazy like fight between languages. And yeah, you can pick it out if you're in tune to it, but you're not going to read it right away. I mean, can you pick it out in Spanish?
Sometimes. I think within countries you can.
Yeah.
I think it's easier.
Because you'll see a word like, oh, that's
exactly, not. Yeah.
Like, if you see the word paradise for tomato, you know it's an Austrian book. If you see Schlagobers instead of Schlagsahne, then you know it's an Austrian book. But generally, it's difficult.
Yeah, it's more complicated for sure.
What if they don't mention tomatoes?
They don't mention tomatoes, and you're screwed,
you're,
buddy.
You're fucked.
You're fucked. Yeah. But yeah, you can generally pick it out. Like Max Frisch's book, who's a Swiss author, you can pick out his stuff. You can pick out Swiss's. Although it's all written in standard German, you hear it's Swiss.
So like, do you get irritated when people speak, you know, grammatically incorrect?
depending on the situation, but just generally no.
Because grammatically, I was going to speak, but writing, man, it bothers me so much.
Well, when you're writing, yeah, but when you're speaking, yeah, that's difficult because what is grammatically correct and who creates grammatically correct? What is prescriptive grammar even worth anymore? It's a way to communicate so we all understand each other. But if you're in a community that uses particular grammatical forms, it's not incorrect to them. It's incorrect to you.
I guess. I mean, that's what I was getting to initially when I was asking you, like, whether or not these rules need to be maintained. And you said these rules are meant to be broken as long as the community is breaking it together. So it's like, if everyone's breaking it, then cool. But if it's not, then you're incorrect and you better, like, fall in line.
Yeah, or you can try to be a trailblazer and change something, but generally that's not going to work. For example, my friend tried to bring back...
Sexy Beck?
No, he wanted to bring back Bangarang. So I kept saying Bangarang for everything.
When was Bangarang?
I don't know. The only thing that came to mind when he kept saying it was Mean Girls, like, stop trying to make fetch a thing.
Yeah, my brother says rock and roll a lot. It's like, it's very awkward.
But
it's
what has happened?
Rock and roll, man. I'm like, what? What are you fucking saying, man? Yeah.
But like on a microcosm level of influence from outside sources, we had this friend Marco, who's Serbian, who played in the Balkan band with us in Arizona. And one time we got into a big fight, me and Jarko, right? Because Jarko's, he's like my big brother, but we get into fights a lot. And then Marco comes and he's like, hey, chill down, you fully loaded motherfuckers. Who the fuck says chill down? I've never heard it before.
Or take a chill pill.
Yeah, take a chill pill. Chill out. But he said, chill down, you fully loaded motherfuckers.
Chill down.
And so that caught on.
It's like calm down.
Yeah. But all of us in that band started saying, chill down, you fully loaded
motherfuckers. Well, that kind of reminds me of in high school. Like, I started saying game over. I remember like in ninth grade. And everyone started like saying game over. I mean, it's a completely different thing, but it just reminded me of that.
Well, I mean, we both say ciao.
Ciao.
And then people who know me, now when I leave, they say ciao as well. But initially, like, why the fuck are you saying ciao? And we call each other wei. And I remember when we were younger, people that would hear us call each other wei would fucking start using wei.
No wei.
Yeah, wait.
Charlie, wait.
No, wait.
No, it just says you want to.
What does way mean? Like, what's the.
Way is like. No, it's an ox.
Yeah.
Yeah, like literally it's an ox.
An ox?
Yeah, like oxtail. Yeah, I love oxtail.
Like an animal, the ox?
Shout out to oxtail lovers. I love oxtail. Out there, you know who you are.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like in German, you say Alte. Which means old guy.
Alter,
yeah. For like your friends, like, what's this Alter? What's up, old man?
Well, I mean, dude is like, what's dude like?
A horse, something with a horse. Horse
like, my dad said it was a wart on a cow's ass, but I think he was just messing with me.
Like, dork is like a whale's penis, right, or something?
Yeah, so it's a different term. But yeah, you guys start saying way and the people start saying along with you. Marco said, chill down. We started saying, chill down. My friend Amanda said, kula bonen, which means cool beans in English, but she translated to German. Yeah. We had two German exchange students in my high school who went back to their home in Germany and started saying Kula Bonen, and then everybody in their school started saying it.
Yeah, and then there's a whole subreddit called Kula Bonen.
Probably. Yeah. So yeah, it's just like, language will change depending on the context. And
I love the way certain languages have their curse words.
Yeah.
Like, we say holy shit. Or Jesus fucking Christ, right?
Yeah.
In Scandinavia, they use fy fan, you know, like the fan, which is like the fan is
the fans.
No, the fan is like corresponds with the devil.
You kind of look like the font, actually.
It looks nothing like the font. Yeah.
Fonts can't say no. Nope.
Like all the curse words in Scandinavia, whatever it's, you know. Norwegian or Swedish, Finnish or Icelandic all have to do with the devil.
Oh.
Which for us it has to do with, you know, Christianity. It's amazing.
Yeah, in German it's in the south it's all Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very Catholic in the south. They use a
lot of that. In Oslo, Norway, I remember like just walking in the capital and they have the statue of this faun with his like horns, right? This devilish character. Playing that, what is that instrument called with the little, it's like those little
pan flute?
Yes, the pan flute. Yeah. And he has this just massive fucking erection. This massive fucking, you know, bronze dick because of the statues. It's fucking amazing.
But you know Satanas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like the Finns love to sing Satanas.
Yeah.
Perkele.
Yeah.
So it's all about hell.
Yeah, so which is it's amazing. I love it.
And for some reason, and then Dutch, they talk about sickness. So instead of like telling someone to go fuck off, it's like, may you get cancer.
Oh yeah, Kunkelier.
Yeah,
yeah. That's like that's someone like
who, so bad.
Like so the person who has cancer, right?
Yeah,
Kunkelier. That's like the worst Dutch curse you can fucking like wish upon someone.
It's well, like, you know, like in Spanish, it's all like a lot, like or in Portuguese, so like go fuck your mother.
Yeah.
Same right? With like the mother, like the mom is so important, you know, it's like sacred.
Yep.
Piche tu madre.
Yeah. In Romanian, there's like this curse that says, I fuck the bee that takes the nectar off the flower of your mother's grave.
What?
Yeah. And it's like, okay, that's really weird.
In middle school, the Persians taught me the curse of like, manya chaptu kunem nenet. Which means like I hide the stick in your mom's vagina.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Well then,
I don't know why the stick is involved. You know, just use your dick, dude. If you're going that far,
if you're gonna tell you know, about,
might as well.
Just like in certain regions, your mother is holy, but in German, like if you have someone like, ugh, I fucked your mom last night, they don't like, no, you didn't. She was at home with my dad.
Yeah. My friend, they take it literally.
I know my friend gets like a tongue in that. It's like, yeah, man, shut up. Your mom's fat. It's like. Well, no, she's not. She's.
I have a picture right here. No.
She's actually at the body mass index. Yeah.
In the right range.
But Germans, and you insult their mother, they're just like, no, don't. It makes no sense. You can't do it. Because he's German. He also has an American citizenship, and he gets it. He's like, yeah, you talk shit in English about our moms, but like, it doesn't work in German. You can't do that because we just.
Like, just don't mention our dads.
Yeah.
Don't mention our grandparents.
Please.
Like, your grandpa, I know what he did. But yeah, it's like you can't bring your mom jokes in Germany. Like, that's why it never works because they don't care. Like, I know what my mom is, so who cares? So
yeah. I guess they take it a little bit more literally.
Yeah, that's why Germans aren't necessarily funny. I mean, they are, but in their own special
way. Funny to us.
Yeah, there are very few German comedians who are really good. Like, Jan Böhmermann is amazing. He's a recent comedian who got in lots and lots and
lots of
trouble.
Is he performing in German or English?
In German. He got busted for a poem he wrote about Aragon.
Yeah, no, I know that. I know that comedian.
Yeah, he got in lots of trouble for talking shit. But
yeah.
I saw.
Well, apparently Germany has a law that you can't make fun of or criticize another country's leader.
You can criticize them, but you can't.
You can't make fun?
Yeah, you can't.
It's so ridiculous.
It's the fucking dumbest law ever.
That was put in place probably.
So it's going to happen to him?
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing really. Angela Merkel said, yeah, we're going to put it to court. Like, but there's so much procedure involved in it where nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just started like, Aragon, shut up here. Look, we're doing something. Now be quiet and go play with your goats. Or whatever. Sorry, Turkey.
Exactly.
Don't come after me now. I'll be there in Istanbul.
you're going
Turkish
guy's
going to be listening to Istanbul. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, so
you're traveling soon, right? You're going to be in Europe for a month.
Yeah.
Like in July.
Yeah.
Where are you planning on going?
I'm going to Asturias, man.
Asturias. Where is Asturias? For those people who don't know.
It's the northern part of Spain. It's like basically the exact opposite of Andalusia. Sorry, Andalusia. Like
Andalusia.
North of Bilbao?
No, it's like west.
It's west of Bilbao, yeah.
Okay.
It's on the same area. Yeah. Same region, very up north.
Basque.
West of the Basque country.
Okay.
It's Asturias, which is basically, they believe they're what caused Spain to be Spain. Because like if it weren't for Asturias, we'd still be Muslims. Or you'd still be Muslims.
The Moors.
Yes, the Moors. More Moors. Yeah. So the Asturianos, they came down, right? They reconquered Spain.
What's the city in Spain that, like, it's, I don't know what the translation would be, but it says, like, kill the Moors?
Oh, no, you're talking about Matamoros.
Matamoros. Yeah. Death to the Moors.
Yeah. Really?
That's, yeah. Matamoros.
Yeah, okay, I never thought of it like that.
That's the name of the fucking city. Yeah, what a Matamoros. Fucking thing. Yeah, yeah. Like,
wow. You know the history of the croissant?
The croissant?
Yeah.
Like, the fucking pastry?
Yeah.
The delicious.
Was it in Turkish?
No, it was actually, it's called a kipfrel in Austria beforehand. It was a croissant.
It was called a what?
A kipfrel.
Kipfrel.
Yeah, K-I-P-F-R-L, I think. Kipfrel. Whatever, I can't spell off the top of my head. It's a weird dialect word. And they created them after the failed Turkish attempt of sacking Vienna. And so they created crescent moons as a sort of way of saying, look, we're eating you.
Oh,
you
lost. That's why I love croissants so much.
So every time you eat a croissant, you're telling Turkey.
Solidarity to my Armenian brothers.
Yeah, there you go. So everyone, grab a croissant. and stick a middle
finger.
That's
crazy. That's yeah.
not.
That's,
I mean,
that's fascinating.
Don't blame
like,
Turkey, but blame the government.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
That's where the croissants come from.
So, like, Asturias is like, are you planning on going anywhere else? Like, yeah.
I wanna go to San Sebastian. I wanna go to Galicia, and I definitely want to Portugal.
Portugal, yeah, you have to go to Portugal. Yeah, you got to go to Lisbon. Yeah,
I don't really need to go anywhere further south. Like, I'm going to fly into Madrid. I don't need to go south.
Yeah, yeah.
The Boom Festival is happening this year. So.
Yeah, man, it's too hot. You know, like people can't speak Spanish very well there.
If you're in Portugal during the Boom Festival, I suggest you make your way there.
I know. Esteban told me about it.
Yeah.
I want to go do stuff. Well, no. First thing I want to do is...
Go do stuff.
Yeah. I want to write my dissertation.
Yes.
So I spoke with my coworker today. He's like, you know what you do? Get the Hemingway thing going. Like, wake up in the morning at 6 o'clock, have a piece of cardboard in front of you, and say, I'm going to write this many words this day. And once I'm done, then I can go get wasted and do whatever the fuck I want the rest of the day.
And go boxing, shoot a line, down some rum.
One of those three.
And then end up in Cuba at some point.
And then, yeah, I'm going to take a boat to Cuba.
And die.
And die. There's actually a linguistics conference in Santiago de Cuba.
Yeah.
So I might apply.
Cubano with Chico.
Yeah. They said, like, all papers must be submitted via Word 6.0 or 7.0. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
That's horrible.
Yeah, no, like, this is not 1983 anymore, people.
As long as they have lechon, you know, like, I think you're good. Oh,
yeah,
look. There. All right, Mr. Nicholas.
That is I.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank
we
God,
hit
man.
The
thank
hour
you.
Mark.
We did.
I saw only turn into a pumpkin. Goes by fast.
Oh man.
Bloop. Yeah. Bloop. Or a croissant, you know, it's more
a croissant, yeah.
Yeah. Is there I don't know, how can do you want people to reach you? You want to stay hidden? What's I don't know.
They can reach me if they want, yeah.
All right.
So yeah, if you want me to my email address or what?
I don't know. Give it up either. That's like looks way too intimate. I don't know if you're have you know any shows as a tuba player or
those
your
are random
skills of linguistics and whatnot.
If you want to see my linguistic skills, you can go to the UCLA CDH blog and try to find my shit there.
Yeah, how do we get there? Seems so interesting.
Just Google it.
therewith.com.
Yeah, look for UCLA Center for Digital Humanities and then type in something like Daria. Because I did a research project on Dario, but like, I don't have a website.
The MTV like show back in the day.
I do play once in a while with the California Feet Warmers, so if you get a chance to hear them, even when I'm not playing,
it was actually performing last weekend at Grand Central Market in the opening in the summer nights.
Really,
with the
Feet Warmers, the they're feet like warmers, yeah. I'm gonna
California
give a
Feet Warmers.
Yeah, they're like the best band I've ever played with in my life. Like every one of those fuckers is like a genuine human being.
And
like,
what type of music?
1920s and 30s American dance hall.
Fuck yeah.
And they are like the best. Like I don't like they're so fucking humble.
I mean, I'm unplugging you. You also played at Clifton's a couple weekends ago.
Dude, every time I've gone to Clifton's the music has been phenomenal.
Yeah. So yeah, those guys, like I said, if you get a chance to hear them,
California
Feet Warmers.
Feet Warmers.
Yeah.
Look them up. Google.
Because I'm not in the band, but once in a while they let me play, and I feel like I don't need therapy, man. I see these boys. They're the greatest human beings.
Sit and blow on your instrument.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Blow hard.
See you guys soon. Eat some croissants. Much love.
Ciao.
Okay, ciao.
Ciao.